You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. Stop waiting around for the perfect candidate. Instead, use Indeed-sponsored jobs to find the right people with the right skills fast. It's a simple way to make sure your listing is the first candidate see. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs have 4 times more applicants than non-sponsored jobs. So go build your dream team today with Indeed. Get a $75 sponsored job credit at Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. I am your nine-fingered host. For those of you on YouTube, that's my nub. And today we are joined by fellow Sportsman's Empire podcaster, Mr. Jeremy Dinsmore of the Antler Up podcast. One of my favorite guests, by the way, because I feel like me and you kind of live in the same lane.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
How's it going, dude?
Dude, it's going really well. It's fascinating how fast deer season comes and goes, but also how fast things could turn around for you in which you obviously know as well. So things are going pretty well, dude.
Yeah, that's good, man. And so one of the reasons we're recording this today, I reached out and I'm like, hey, you got some time to record a podcast? And you said something like, I'm taking today off, or you're taking a couple hours of PTO. Why are you taking PTO today?
Cut up some deer.
Cut up some deer. And that's a good reason to use paid time off.
Yep. Yeah, and then beforehand, I got a little doctor's appointment. So it all works out. So it ends up being very, very smooth, and be able to cut up some deer before that and do what I need to do.
That's right. All right. So how old are your kids? Or you just have one girl, right?
So I have a 10-year-old daughter, and then I have a soon to be 1-year-old. Another little girl.
All right. Couple questions I have for you here. Are you involved in the Christmas present category at all? Or is that 100% your wife?
I'm involved a little bit. Like, you know, we have a little list of who's getting what, basically, who's coming from Santa and who's coming from the parents, basically. Yep. And so that's the way we usually do. And I'll, you know, with some extra cash, I'm like, here, I cross that off the list. It's coming. Or then, you know, then we hide it basically in plain sight.
Yeah. I'm getting to the age in my life, and I talked about this a little bit on the episodes, like on the previous episode, where, man, my kids have a ton of stuff already, and gifts at this point don't mean anything other than just opening up something, getting excited about it. It's almost like that dopamine hit.
Yep.
Like most people get when they scroll. And so I just don't want any more stuff in my house. I feel like one thing that I think I'm going to do, honestly, this week or maybe next, is to have my kids go through all of their stuff, pick out, like, I don't know, 5-10 items, whatever they don't play with, put it in a sack and take it to Goodwill or some donation center or something like that, so some other kids can have a decent. Because I'll tell you this shit right now, there's a lot of kids out there that would be very happy with the stuff that my kids don't even touch anymore.
Exactly, yeah. Same. Yeah. I'm in the same.
And one of those kids is me from the 1980s.
Right.
My kids are spoiled, dude. I'm gonna straight up. And that's partly my problem.
Yep. I'm with you, though. That's the same thing for us. I mean, my oldest, she's 10, and obviously with the soon-to-be one-year-old, it's like we have that huge gap. So Nora was spoiled her whole life, basically. And the other day, she's been off. Like, we've been back at school since Monday, whereas the district where we live in, they've had off Monday and Tuesday because of deer season, still an extended kind of Thanksgiving break. And she was messaging my wife and I through her iPad and her Apple Watch because she doesn't have a phone. And she's messaging us getting ready for dance class last night. And she's like freaking out about pants and like just going crazy. And she called, I guess, my wife. And I'm like, was she crying? Like, was she upset? She's like, she was a little upset. Like, I didn't understand. And then I go, did you put her in her place? She goes, oh, yeah. And, you know, I was just like, well, you know, she's just like, do you understand what you're crying about or upset about? Like, there's so much. You know, so we're trying to give her that tough love a little bit, but I'm glad the wife's on board more so lately because I used to always get in trouble. You're too hard. You're do this. And it's like, all right.
Yeah. Well, obviously there is a line where you can be too hard on your kids.
Right.
But I think that's a lot farther than people think. Mm-hmm. Like I'll be honest. I give my kids opportunity to make the right decision, but when they don't or they are being lazy, man, I'll ride their ass. I have no problem doing that. Despite what other people may think, like my mom and dad rode my ass and I turned out, I guess, okay. At some point I turned out okay. And I'm not in federal prison right now.
Right.
I'm not a felon. So my daughter, okay, she is this 11-year-old. Right. Mm-hmm. She turns 12 in February and she is going through the change. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm just going to be blunt. Like, I'm a dad. I don't think she's had her period yet, but she's going through this emotional change where mom and dad are not number one. Social life is starting to be number one. Hanging with her friends, things like that are more important than mom and dad. And that breaks my heart a little bit because my daughter is the one that made me a dad. And so I feel like I'm really connected to her in a way. And now she's kind of breaking off. Like, she obviously still relies on her parents for almost everything, but emotionally and mentally she is not daddy's little girl anymore. And as a dad of a little girl, it's kind of disheartening, dude, a little bit.
I agree.
I miss the little girl, you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you. That's where I'm starting to see, like, she's all like, she still has the, you know, the imagination and all that type of stuff and believes in fun stuff as well. But at the same time, she's like trying to do makeup things, like not makeup, but like skincare, like lotions. Yep. I'm like, oh my gosh, what are we? We're already here. Like, oh my.
Yep. Yep.
It's crazy.
At least you got this little precious bundle.
Yeah.
That will still sit on your lap and she'll still probably snuggle with you and things like that. My daughter doesn't want to do any of that shit anymore.
Yeah. That's crazy. It goes quick though, Dan. Like, I can't believe it. Like I said, I remember literally years ago when you were still doing things with Mark on Wired to Hunt. And I just remember, like, man, I know, like, Mark used to always crack jokes about how people would chime in about what the hell are you guys always talking about with kids for, or like give shit about you guys doing that. But it's like, for some people it's very relatable, you know what I mean. Like, I don't recall, it was so, like, this year was like a 2x4 up the side of my face because having the newborn, basically. It was just so, it was a different season for me because I was so long removed from Nora growing up during hunting season and all that type of stuff that I forgot the limited amount of time I did have. And I don't want to say guilt, but it was just like, you know, I didn't want to put a lot on my wife because back then we only had the one. Now with the two, basically, Nora's in a bunch of different things, running around and needs this, that. So, you know, I was kind of like that weekend warrior because of what Nora had during the week. So it was definitely a different perspective. Yeah. But like you said, it was definitely nice to, you know, I still felt like I balanced it pretty well and, you know, did a good job with it.
Yeah. And the older I get, the more I just am, I'm always thinking about my priorities.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I always come to this conclusion, like, dude, man, I'm so lucky to do what I'm able to do. Like, I've built this business basically to be able to do two things. One is to hunt more than what I was hunting when I was sitting in that damn cubicle. And then the other one was the flexibility to be able to spend more time with my family. And as I, like, my job is important, the business part of this is important because it allows me to be flexible. But the thing that I constantly am brought back to is the fact that my family takes priority over absolutely everything in my life. And, you know, and I know this is kind of sappy, but I know dudes out there who are trying to build businesses and they're away from their families and they are so focused on careers and things like that. That's important because that is what provides. But at the end of the day, man, like, I don't think I could trade more money for or less time away from my kids. I just don't think I could do it. I am in my zone right now as a father. Like, I love going to my kids, whether it's dance, whether it's taking them to practice, whether it's playing sports with them, whether it's just wrestling my boys and my daughter down on the wrestling mat and joking around. Like, I don't know why, but I feel like I was made by God or the higher power to be a father. Like, that's what I was made for, and I'm loving my life right now. Like, I'm in my zone, dude.
That's good. I do, because there's a lot of guys, like you said, that are, you know, it's a different side. Like, you can't fault them for being a career. You know, everybody has their own path. But when you feel good about what you're doing, and, you know, my brother-in-law, who was my best man at my wedding and everything, when he always, the one thing that he said, you know, if you could look at yourself in the mirror before you go to bed and be okay with that reflection, you know, you're doing a good job. And, you know, then if not, you got to look at what you need to change and go after it. And it's awesome to hear that, because, you know, a lot of guys are not happy. You know what I mean? And,
oh, yeah.
And it's good to hear that you are.
Yeah. And I'll say this, like, I know we're going to talk about deer here in a second, but this is life, mm-hmm. right? The other thing that I will say is, kids, right, being a father has its pros and cons. Now, being a husband, dude, it's like, I was thinking the other day, I was scrolling through some photos and I saw a picture of one of the first mule deer packouts that I did, and physically a brutal packout, like 100 pounds on the back. You know, it wasn't some like big elk hunt where we had to pack an elk, you know, 10 miles back to a truck, but physically, that was one of the hardest things I've ever done. Mentally had to overcome. I had a job once when I was 25, 26, I was working like 12 to 14 hours a day. I worked for 120 days in a row at that pace. And I was like mentally breaking apart, physically breaking apart because of that job. And nothing is as hard. This is going to sound crazy because you got to find the right woman, mm-hmm. but nothing is as hard as being married, dude.
Yeah.
Like, it is one of the most mentally difficult things. And I know your partner has a lot to do with it. And I love my wife. I know I give her some shit on this podcast every once in a while, but being married, dude, it's not easy. It is not easy. And it is, but it is the foundation of your life and your family and how your kids grow up. And so, I don't know, dude, being married's hard.
Yeah. It's funny too, because, you know, in years past, my wife and I, this year, she was great, and she was happy, she was supportive for certain things, but there were a couple of times where, like, I was like a little confused. I'm like, you know, you didn't give me as much crap in the past, and I was going out a lot more, and I'm like, I'm literally only going the weekend. And I did the other day, I actually like sat down and I was like, okay, what days did I hunt? And I only hunted 7 days total in the state of PA, whereas like in years past, I would do that within the first 2 weeks. You know what I mean? I was going after work. I was doing this. I was doing that. And I did that one time, and I was like, what am I doing? I only have the opportunity to go and sit for like an hour and something. You know, I don't know. I just, I wasn't into it, and it kind of made me want to be home a little bit more and help out. And but yeah, like you said, I give her a lot of crap too, but at the same time, I feel like that foundation is critical for what you were saying, just because, especially now, like with us, it was a whole new dynamic. It was the having a baby, you know, 10 years basically later from our first one, and obviously having our jobs and me having the passion and the podcast and doing all that type of stuff. And I'm like, dude, you gotta do something. Like, yeah, I want you to have a drive and where I'll support you just the same way you support me and all that stuff. But it's hard right now, but we're getting there, man. And but it's just funny how I agree with you 100%. It being the married life is definitely a little bit challenging. And it's fascinating to see too how many people like can't do it. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like there's it's crazy.
Yeah, it's almost like there are times, and I think in marriage a lot of people have a problem with admitting that they, in fact, are the problem because it's hard for, you know, dude, like there are times where I am positive that I am right. And there are times where I know my wife is positive that she is right. And we butt heads over certain things and we imply things but if we don't sit there and talk about it, and just start to fester and resent each other. That's the thing that, I don't want to put words in my wife's mouth, but I think a little bit, my wife isn't a huge fan of her job right now. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a little resentment there for what I have built. And having the ability to work as much or as little as I want, having the flexibility to, oh shit, it's a nice day outside. I'm gonna do my work from 6 a.m. till noon, and then the rest of the day I'm gonna go bounce around with the kids. Yeah. Right. And that's hard for her because she gets to see me do that stuff.
Right.
But what I see when I look at my wife is I go, man, your job is secure. Right? Like here I am, in my job and what I do, and I'm self-employed with Full Sneak Gear and with the Sportsman's Empire and the hosting the podcast, dude, I rely on other people to pay my bills. I don't get an automatic paycheck every single. So the market shit and companies don't want to advertise, that's a problem for me. That's a big problem. And so I am living on this edge where I am like, I think about it all the time. Like, oh my God, like I'm watching. The one thing about my job is there's months where I don't get paid. And then there's other months where I get paid a whole bunch. Mm-hmm. And so then I have to balance that throughout the entire, you know, the course of the entire year. And so I have, I'm always worrying about it. That's the burden that a self-employed, I guess, entrepreneur has to carry. But I love it because I get that freedom that we talked about. So, I don't know, dude. I don't know. Let me ask you a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just gonna say
I have a lot of respect for individuals like yourself, and just because you know there are a couple people out there that I know personally, more so obviously in this hunting, you know, endeavor and not so much in other things, but that has to, you know, grind and put a lot on yourself. You know, you're betting on yourself. And like you said, you have no control of what other companies do. And, you know, they could be, you think one year, like you said, they're doing great. And the next thing you know it, it's
they're gone.
Business, they're gone. And there goes something for, you know, a paycheck for you, like you said.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Teaching.
Mm-hmm.
You're a teacher.
Yep.
How long have you been a teacher?
10 years.
10 years. Okay, that's a long time. Has there ever been a time, because I've seen it, because I used to be that kid that used to test teachers' limits, all right? Has there been a time where you're like, fuck this. Like, these damn kids, I'm done. I want to go do something different.
It, you know, it's funny because I think a couple of years ago, the average span of a teacher's career was only like 5 years. Like,
Yeah,
it was, you know, you just graduated college, you get in, you finally got your teaching job, and those individuals were lasting like 4 or 5 years and kind of getting through that. I want to say up prior to COVID, not really, like, but prior to like that shutdown and all that craziness, and I loved every second of it. And once we went back, things were difficult and kids changed a lot. And just there was a period where I was like, I don't know anymore. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not that there were, I would have days and I'm like, that's why I'm a teacher. Then there were days where, like you said, it's like, oh my gosh, I don't, what else can I do? You know what I mean? I have another degree, fortunately. And teaching was kind of like my second endeavor in career, basically. But I want to say, honestly, Dan, the last 2 years, though, have been really good. Like, we had like that 2 year period of post, or 2.5, 3 years of post COVID. And now I feel like we're on this nice upswing. And lately, I don't know, I think too, I change as an individual, and seeing some of my former students now, they're getting into the teaching world and they're like, man, you changed a lot. I'm like, good, bad? They're like, no, good. Like, you know, they're like, you're still a fun teacher, but you're not as like wound up as tight. You know what I mean? And,
yeah.
And, but like in a good way. So I finally feel like I'm back into my first, you know, 1 through 6 years basically. And, and, I feel pretty good again with what's going on, but man, there's times where I'm just like, you guys got it made. Like, just relax. You know what I mean? Like, just it's okay. Yeah. And I always try to give them like life lessons a little bit here and there once in a while, and just say like, dude, whatever you're going through, it's like a storm. It will pass. And you can get through it.
Yeah. Man, I have those thoughts too, man. Like, I have those thoughts. I've done this for 10 years now, okay? Mm-hmm. And I would be lying. I think what my favorite part about this whole podcast thing is the people and the friendships that I've made along the way. The deer hunting conversation and what I've learned in this time frame is secondary. But I will say this. I would be lying if I didn't have thoughts or goals, or I'm not sure what the right word is, to go and do something else, do something different. I've done this for 10 years. I'm never going to get rich off this. You know, this isn't something that is going to pay for, you know, like, get my wife to quit her job and things like that. It's not going to happen, but, it's awesome to this point, but there's something else like in my life that I love coaching kids, dude. I absolutely love coaching kids. I'm thinking about that more and more, especially now that my kids are of coachable age, and I don't know. There's something else out there for me. I just don't know what it is yet.
I know what you mean, because I mean, people ask me all the time. They're like, "Man, you're coming up to 5 years on your podcast, and are you going to continue to do it?" And there's times where I love when I bank a bunch of episodes, because then it's like I just got to edit a couple, and I'm not worrying about, hey, I need to guess, because that's like the worst feeling, because especially during hunting season, and then post hunting season, people are so tired of talking about hunting or doing hunting, they don't want to do it. And and that's where, like, I said it on one of my recent episodes where I said I've been trying to do different things and having more of that natural, like what we're doing, basically, just because leading up into the year, I heard you even say it on one of this episodes, like in like August or September, it's like I couldn't listen to another episode where it was like early season tactics of how you're going to kill your buck. I couldn't record that, because I'd be so disinterested in listening to somebody. I would rather just have someone come on, whatever naturally, however it flowed. You know, I'm anxious to see how we did this year, just because of that also. Yeah. But at the same time, I don't know. I'd be lying if, like, same thing. Like, I would be lying if I didn't have other thoughts too, like that. And my thing is, I love the conversations, the friends that you build. And so it's like, that's what keeps me going. And if, like, how else can I evolve with it rather than like, if there comes a day where it's like, hey, I don't know what I could do anymore. You know what I mean? And I've talked to you and I've talked to other people and I talked to this and I still can't come up with something. And that's when maybe that day would come, but I don't know when that day will come. Like, I still thoroughly enjoy these conversations and that type of stuff. You know what I mean? Yeah. But yeah, it's tough when you think about it, like for yourself, 10 years, that's a long time. That's a lot of conversations. That's a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty cool though.
Yeah. I'll have to check how many episodes of the Nine Finger Chronicles I've done. I think it's over 900 now. But I've done a cumulative between the Hunting Gear podcast, the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, the How to Hunt Deer podcast, the Iowa podcast that I used to do. I've done over like 1500 episodes, and it just, that's a lot of talking, dude, over 10 years. And so,
that's a lot.
Yeah. All right. That's a good intro. That's a good intro. I feel like we could keep going there, but I do actually want to talk about your season. But before we get into that, we're going to do a quick commercial break. And let's just lead with Tethered, because we both use Tethered products. Talk to me a little bit about your Tethered setup for this past year.
Yeah, so I would say for me this past year, I use, again, solely my UltraLock saddle. I love that thing just because I do sit more than I do lean back or anything along those lines. So having that panel be able to stretch and give me that extra basically cushion, that more material in that UltraLock, I like that. Plus the pouches. I rappelled down the tree, so I still use 3-4 sticks to get up, but coming down because of using an aider, I do like to rappel, so that those pouches allow me to have that. Platform-wise, I ran the Predator V for a couple times, but then especially towards the end of the year, in the late season, I did take the CFX XL out just because of I wanted that little extra boot room slash like just extra material on those longer all-day sits, basically. So
this time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
I'm a big fan of that CFX platform, whether it's the regular one or the XL. I think it's that light, compact, and you know that noise. It makes noise, but it's not like the aluminum noise. It has that I don't know. I guess you could kind of say if you hit it off something, it has more of that dense, like what a rattle, you
like
know,
a wood
antler pack. Yeah, like that wood like sound.
Wood. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, so. What's nice about the Tethered stuff, Dan, is you could really, whatever you are, your body is, you could potentially get into one that will fit you. Like if you're a skinnier individual, that Phantom saddle, even if you're still a bigger individual, that Phantom works great, but I love that UltraLock.
Yeah. Yep. I used the largest metal platform that they have. Mm-hmm. And then I used the original Phantom XL, like that with the two, accessory pouches that had the drawstrings on them.
Yep.
That was my setup all year round. I didn't use very many accessories. I didn't use any of the tether adjusters that they sell. I was old school with everything, and I found my comfort zone in that. Good. And this year I will say that I hunted more out of a saddle than I ever had before, and dude, it's an awesome tool. It's an awesome tool. Did I enjoy some of those days off where I didn't use a saddle and was able to sit in a tree stand? Yes, I did. But every time I went in for like the technical surgical strike, I was in a saddle.
Yeah.
And so, dude, I love the tool, man. I love it.
Yeah.
All right. The next one we both use is Huntworth.
Yep.
And I'm just going to name, two products that I really like. The first one is the Durham pants. Mm-hmm. From those are not only like go out and hunt pants, but those are like Sunday church pants too. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love those pants. They're very comfortable, especially in the early season or shed hunting or when you're doing a lot of walking. I use them exclusively for the my Western hunts, and then I also am a huge fan of the solid colors that they just released.
Yeah, the
love
gray.
Those garments. Yeah. The last one would be, I said this before, when it comes to whatever gimmick or technical verbiage that companies use to sell a product, I couldn't tell you what heat boost technology actually means. But I will tell you this, that the garments that I wore this year, when layered correctly, I was staying warmer with less layers, if mm-hmm. that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so Take that for what it's worth, but Huntworth.
Yeah.
What are some of your favorite garments?
My favorite that I think is extremely versatile is that Graylin hoodie. So it does have that heat boost technology in it. It does not have like a wind stopper in it.
Right.
But this past like weekend, even for PA rifle, like I had just like a little wick kind of base layer, and then I wore that Graylin hoodie, and then I actually layered with my next favorite piece, which I wore was the Saskatoon jacket, and that does have the wind stop capability. So like you said, being able to wear less and stay a lot warmer is fantastic. So my two favorites are that Graylin hoodie and the Saskatoon jacket. And like you even said, though, those Durham pants are also so friggin' sweet, just because if you have a solid color, like you said, church pants, like you could wear them out. Like I'll wear my solid color ones at school. I'll teach in them. And then also, like you said, shed hunting and just going out scouting, they're perfect.
Do you teach in them with deer blood on your pants?
I will say this, last year during turkey season, I was doing something in the garage, and when I lifted up my turkey to do something, I had a little bit of blood on my sneaker and I didn't realize it. And I was like at school, and one kid was like, "Do you got blood on your sneaker?" I was like, "Yeah, I do. That's from my turkey."
That's from the last kid who disrupted class, buddy. Yeah. So better watch it.
Yeah, better watch it.
All right. And then I'll run through, I don't know what, just stop me if you use any of these other products, but Wasp Archery, I do have a discount code NFC20 for 20% off. My two favorite heads are the four blade or the Boss four blade. And then the head that has done the most damage, including this year for me, and basically since I started using it, was the three-blade jackhammer. Absolutely crushes things. WaspArchery.com. The next is Vortex Optics. Huge fan of the people. And when it comes to optics, they have number one, they're the cream of the crop. Number two, they have everything from rangefinders to red dots to rifle scopes, spotting scopes, obviously binoculars, and then a kick-ass apparel line, and then sunglasses. I feel like since we're coming up on Christmas, a Vortex optic of any price point, of any binocular, spotting scope, whatever, is an ultimate once-in-a-lifetime Christmas gift for whoever you're buying it for.
Yeah.
So vortexoptics.com, go check it out. Code Blue Sense. And by the way, I wanted to mention this. Where did my phone go? This morning and overnight, two deer, one was a three-year-old, one a potential four-year-old, hit my mock scrape that I made this morning in front of my trail camera. And so it tells me that they're not completely done with the rut quite yet. They went up to it, they sniffed, they rubbed their antlers on it. I couldn't tell if they pawed the ground on the scrape, but that Rope-A-Dope mock scrape kit, it's probably too late to start introducing it now in the year. You know, that's probably not a great sales pitch, but I will say that this spring, as early as turkey season, dude, start getting those mock scrapes out, start getting deer used to them. And then anytime you go out into the woods, rub some of that pre-orbital on there. They also have a complete lineup of real synthetic deer urines, body washes, laundry detergents, so go check out Code Blue Scents, CodeBlueScents.com. Enter the discount code NFC for $2 or 20% off. We've talked about Huntworth. Reveal cell cams. Huge fan of Reveal. Here's what they do.
They work.
I put them out. Say what?
They work.
They work. That's all I can, like, whether it's hot, they work. Cold, they work. The only time they don't work is user error for me, and that's when they run out of batteries, or if I put them in front of a camera that just there's wind or a piece of grass, and they do that, right, and batteries run out. Dude, they work. All I want in a cell cam is for it to take a picture and send it to me. That's the most basic need of a camera and a cell cam, and that's why I have really found a lot of success, and I actually just really like the Reveal cell cams. Go to tacticam.com/cameras and check out the new 3.0 versions of those. That would I feel like that would also make a really good Christmas gift, would be 100%. A cell cam for someone who's never used a cell cam before. Mm-hmm. I will say this, the older guys that may not necessarily have ever used trail cameras, like your dad's age, you know, maybe even a grandpa who's got a smart, like knowledgeable enough to use a smartphone, I think it would just be fun for them to open their phone up and check their cell cams every day. Mm-hmm. So think about that. All right. I believe that's it. Oh, and my company, fullsneakgear.com, go check it out. Those also make really good gifts for people.
So cool shirt designs.
I got two new ones coming out, hopefully before Christmas. So if you're a last minute shopper like myself, they should be ready for the Christmas late last minute shopper. Deer hunting now. Let's talk deer hunting. Jeremy, rate your season thus far on a scale of 1 to 10.
I'd say a 8.5.
8.5. Explain.
So I filled my buck tag in Pennsylvania. I filled my buck tag in Ohio. I filled a doe tag also in Pennsylvania. So if you would have asked me last week, I would probably have said like a 6-7-ish. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I still kind of, I guess, high for that, even though at that point in time, I didn't fill a buck tag and doe tag in PA yet at that point, was just because I didn't really have a goal for PA. I kept saying, and I didn't realize that till like later on in the year. And I kept saying, I want an adventure. I want to do this. I want to pack something out. I didn't really say like, I want to kill a blank. I want to, or challenge myself or to kill a deer here or this point in time of the year. I really put a lot of eggs in my Ohio basket basically. And for like when that trip happened. And what sucks is that trip was usually, I knew it was always like the good time when I go back in Northeast PA to hunt with my dad up on our mountain. And it was right because when I was there, my dad's calling me with just crazy rut activity while he was hunting and missed opportunities for him and everything. Yeah. But leading up to that, like I said, I didn't hunt a lot in the state of PA. And there was a weekend in October, like that 25th, whatever that weekend was, I had really good action. And again, I know the one area that I go hunt, it could potentially start popping off around that time. And I had a lot of good deer movement, a couple young bucks, a couple doe. And then later on in the evening, my wind was perfect where I was. And I had a doe feeding about like 45 yards to me, kind of like where all the deer were earlier in the day. And I actually repositioned my saddle because of that. And doing so, I was just hanging out watching this deer, and she kept looking into the little thicket that was, I don't know, maybe 20 more yards past where she was. I was like, something's got to be coming because just the way she was acting. And I caught antlers, and I kind of glassed them up with my Vortex optics, and I saw he was a good buck, one of the ones that I was getting on camera. So I got my bow ready. I was in position, and I kind of swung around the tree. and I could still feel the wind was still good because of where this the doe was and where the deer was, the buck was potentially coming to. So he closes the distance a little bit, gets about even with her, Dan. And at that point in time, I just felt like wind hit from a whole different direction on my face. And I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. And then like, it was like 4 o'clock, you know what I mean? And at that point, we still had a couple hours to go until last shooting light. I'm like, shifting already on me? And next thing you know, to like swung around again and then just hit the back of my neck, the wind did. And then blew right to him. And he was coming. And as soon as that wind hit, like maybe 10 seconds later, he just stopped. And he's just like kind of looking around, put his nose up in the air. She's kind of like watching him. I could see her out of my peripheral of my right eye. And he just turned around and just walked away. And as he kind of got a little bit further away, I did do a little small like grunt, and he didn't really care. He just walked and moseyed away. And yeah. I was like, dang, that was my, I think that would have been my chance. And, you know, you always hear you have that one chance. And the next weekend being Halloween, we had really crappy weather. Somebody was sick in my house, and I got out to hunt that Friday. And I think that Saturday, something happened Saturday where I didn't get a chance to go out as like I would have loved to on that. And then I left to Ohio and had a successful fill my tag there. Really cool to be with my friend. He shot a buck like the first night we got there, basically, and I was 30 yards up from the tree from him. The next day, had a ton of encounters, two really good bucks. And then that following day is when I got in the morning, had four doe come down a logging road. He came out of the timber spot, and by the time he hit that logging road, I was already at full draw and put a really, I'm confident in that shot. Basically, he was like walking away from me, and he was very close. I mean, 10 yards, and I had an opening, and I was like, man, I'm going to just drive this arrow right up in him. And just knowing 70 pounds, I was still using mechanical, but I was just confident in that shot. So I was like, two things are going to happen. Either that arrow is going to just drive straight up in him, he'll pile up, or I'm going to hit that femoral and he's still going to pile up not far. And the first option happened. I just drove it right above his like kind of left hip. And the only thing that I saw as he was running away and when I went to him was just the knock, like the little lighted knock. That was it.
That's a badass penetration.
Yeah, dude. It was like he ran like 30 yards, barrel rolled, and landed on his belly. And I could see him through the tree where I was in my saddle just watching this all transpire. Picked his head up once, put it down, and that was it. And like when I cleaned him out, when I field dressed him, the heart was the bottom end of the heart was just split in half like that.
Ooh, buddy.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. So
it's awesome.
That was a cool day. Then later on, my other friend killed that like later on that morning. And then his wife killed a buck. So there was like deer were just dropping in Ohio those couple days, and came back. And again, it was just like weird. I got out maybe one other time like that weekend, and I can't remember. Oh, because then I went up to New York. I went up to New York that one weekend, and you could hunt Sunday here in PA. Didn't see a single deer that whole weekend. Yeah. So I got skunked, and I was like, all right, well, I guess I'll be trekking around with the rifle here in PA. And fast forward to this past weekend, and Saturday night, or Saturday morning was our opening day. Shot a doe like kind of right off the rip at like 8 something in the morning, and took care of her. Had a buck encounter later on in the evening with my buddy, kind of just went to a different spot. And on Sunday morning, I did not bring my saddle, but I still brought my platform. And all I did was I put it like a foot off the ground, just so enough that I could like pull myself up and stand on it. And I did that because that's what I did even the day prior, because I forgot my saddle. I was like so excited. I did everything, and I get to the tree that I was getting ready to climb, Dan. And I'm like, oh shit. Like I don't have my saddle. Like it was just, I don't know. I was just losing my mind. Yeah, it was like, I remember my first day of hunting too.
Exactly.
And but then that morning it was so cold, and I was warm everywhere but my toes. And that's usually like what happens, but I wear, I don't know. I was perfectly fine Saturday all day. I didn't have any issues of being cold. The only thing that was cold on Sunday was my dang feet. So I messaged my buddy who was a couple ridges above me. And I said, I'm going to go do a walk for you. Let me know if I kick anything up. And at this point, my good friend Tim is on the south side of our mountain and he already killed a buck, real nice one. And so I walked to my friend Jim, and as I'm walking to him, didn't kick anything. I meet up with him. I finally see the top of the mountain, just how awesome it is. Just sign of friggin' rub was on every other tree, I swear. It was just insane to see that. Yeah. And the only scrapes that were out and about that we truly could find are just on the logging roads. Like if you walk through the timber, you'd be like, I guarantee you there would be a scrape there. Nope. It's just, they're all on the logging roads. And we ended up meeting up with Jim, and we said, let's go meet Tim. So we start walking our way over to see Tim, and we're at the peak of the mountain, and then going towards him, there's like a little mini bench, and there was these rocks. We're like, let's just go hang out at these rocks for a little bit. So we have a snack, we're talking, we're doing this, and next thing you know it, he's like, dude, there's a buck. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, buck. I'm like, what do you mean? I'm like, where? And he goes, it's bedded. I'm like, no way. So I put up my scope and I see the buck bedded, and I needed to stand up to get a better look. So I stood up. He's still looking over at the edge. And as that is going on, I'm like, do you want him? He's like, no, you can have him. I'm like, all right, cool. And waited for the wind to pick up again for myself to stand up on the rock to get even higher. I do that. And I'm like, dude, I could get him. I just need him like to stand up. So I'm going to make a sound. And as soon as I said that, I stepped on like a piece of leaf or something on our rock. And it got enough, heard it. And he stood up. I put the crosshairs on him. My buddy's like, Jim's like, dude, if you're on, I go, boom. I don't even let him finish what he was saying. And shot the buck and nice little 8-point. Bombed down over, met up with Tim. Tim's like, dude, there's a dead buck right in front of me. I was like, yep, that was mine. So it was really cool. It was just like Jim shot a doe basically too, right then and there. So like the two of us killed two deer on basically seconds apart. Tim was packing out his deer. And so all three of us packed out a deer that afternoon. It was pretty freaking cool.
LifeLock, how can I help?
The IRS said I filed my return,
but I haven't.
1 in 4 tax-paying Americans has paid the price of identity fraud.
What do I do?
My refund, though.
I'm freaking out.
Don't worry, I can fix this.
LifeLock fixes identity theft guaranteed and gets your money back with up to $3 million in coverage.
I'm so relieved.
No problem. I'll be with you every step of the way.
1 in 4 was a fraud-paying American. Not anymore. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
That's awesome, dude. I mean, that sounds like an eight season to me.
Yeah.
It sounds like my season was a little different. Like anytime I go to South Dakota, whether I kill a deer or not, that's a 10. Like, I don't know what it is about that place. Do I get frustrated and bitch about the deer? Yes, I do. But that's on me, not on the deer, right? Every year I've gone out there, I've seen decent deer. I've seen decent numbers of deer. It's just a matter of me trying to get into shooting range. And I did that this year, 10. Kansas, 10. Got to go experience something that I've never, a place I've never hunted before. Got to hunt with my uncle, who I haven't hunted with for decades, what feels like a decade or more. And then, of course, on top of that, I did shoot a buck. And so I had an absolute blast in those two scenarios. The court is still out on Iowa. The rut was crazy this year. Everybody I talked to in Iowa, Illinois, Wisconsin, Minnesota, northern Missouri, eastern plain states, just different. Everything was completely different this year. And I want to talk about that here in just a little bit. But my season was a success. And there's still time to hunt. You know, I still have my archery bow tag that I can fill late season. And I also have a muzzleloader tag that I can fill this season. So there's still quite a bit of time left to get the job done there. Now, one thing that somebody brought up to me this year of why the rut in a lot of the country was whack this year was the fact that we had so many hurricanes hit the southeastern part of the United States, causing irregular weather patterns further inland. And so I looked at this. I'm looking at it right now. Here are all of, and this infected the Caribbean, obviously, Mexico, obviously, but also, obviously, when anything comes into the Gulf of Mexico, it's going to affect the South in some way, shape, or form. That pressure system is going to move up into the rest of the country. And check these dates out. Here, let's even go back one more here. September 26th, Florida. That affects weather throughout the entire country. October 6th, that hit Florida. We had October 19th hit the Gulf of Mexico. We had Bahamas and Florida, and I think it was a hurricane, then it turned into a tropical storm. And there's no date with this one, but in between October 9th and November 6th. Then we had November 6th, one hit there. And so this continued pressure was coming up into the United States. And I'm thinking this had something to do with the amount of east winds that I was seeing this year, which is abnormally overkill east winds for me. My question to you is, Pennsylvania, Ohio, where you were at, did you see irregular weather patterns? Did you have consistent winds at all? Or were they like just, were things out of whack as well?
Yeah, things were definitely out of whack. Like even, because I remember even talking to some of my buddies and I was like, man, I'm really not getting out hunting like PA much. And like, well, you're not missing much. They're like, this weather sucks. And I'm like, yeah, I know. And it was just kind of, I need to go back now and do what I usually do at the end of the year is just like kind of look at those days I hunted and look at those, like what patterns did I see there basically. But yeah, I mean, it was like when I went to Ohio, that day that I got in there, it rained like the night before in the morning of, and that was the first rain they got in like months.
Yeah.
In Ohio. So that was like, I mean, now I was happy about that because it was good for some movement. But as far as like PA goes, like the winds were all odd compared to what it was always. Like you said, like east winds were kind of crazy. We got a lot of like we got a lot of northwest because where I hunt back at home, if I got a north wind, I'm okay. When it starts getting like northwest, that's when it's not good for me. And then a couple western winds, but yeah, it was just looking back at some of those days, like even talking to my dad that if I didn't hunt, I just remember him saying a lot this year is I don't have a good wind. I don't have a good wind. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go up here. I'm going to go up here. I'm going to go down here just because of the way the wind was. And it was warm too. Like we didn't have a very cold fall until like later on.
Yeah, there were definitely days where it was in the high 40s, which, I mean,
it's not bad.
I don't think in the rut there's like high 40s are an issue. We did have some, you know, 50s and 60 days as well, but I never had that feeling when I stepped outside in the morning where you can see your breath and you're just like kill day. Like today is a kill day. And I just didn't have those feelings. It felt humid, it felt stagnant outside. It just felt like there, whatever, just the feeling itself was just placed over top of the Midwest this year, and nothing exciting happened. Mm-hmm. It was like gravy. It just felt slow and sticky, and I don't know. And there was never any days where it's like, hold on to your ass because here comes the rut. Like there was none of that.
Yeah.
And so I'm just trying to feel people out about like the wind was always for me. Now that I'm thinking about it, the wind was never really consistent in a specific direction. Like there were days where I had to hunt an east wind, but I also had to hunt it for northeast, southeast, east, you know, basically the entire range. And as I'm sitting in the tree, there were times in every sit where I'm just like, dude, I'm getting busted tonight, because there was never a time where the wind was just set.
Yeah.
It was just all over the place. And I think on top of that, with the pressure systems, with the, I don't know, I just felt like thermals weren't even doing what they were supposed to be doing, especially on the random crisp, cool mornings. Right. I just felt even in the afternoons, they were dropping. Mm-hmm. And I would say that in the mornings, there were a couple places, especially on major terrain features, where I was able to do that. But predominant wind trumped thermals this year, yeah. a lot of yeah. the places where I was at. And just wacky is yeah. all I can say.
Yeah, I like the wacky and gravy term, because that's yeah. I could totally relate to that for this year.
Yeah, yeah. And so as you kind of look back, I mean, you put tags on deer where you hunt, but is there anything, like, I look back now and there are a couple things that I think I should have done once I got some more information about the properties, but I kind of went back to Old Faithful. Dude, it's just, you know, it's going to take time. It's going to take time. And I never got ultra aggressive.
Right.
Because I thought we're going to come out of this pattern. We're going to come out of it. Well, we didn't come out of it. And so for me, I look at that and I'm just like, I should have cannonballed into a spot knowing I was going to jump deer and then kind of waited it out.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. That's my Ohio trip was kind of like that. Like the first night we got there, my friend, I mean, it's his property where he grew up. I mean, he lives in PA now, but it's family area. And he's like, dude, the oak tree produced this year. When I was out here earlier, we're going to go in there. I guarantee you we're going to see deer. And I mean, we were set up and then literally half hour later, deer are like working their way in. Yeah. And I was like, wow, okay. Like, this is it. Here we go. And, we hunted that evening. Like I said, within 2 hours, a buck came underneath him and he took a good shot with his trad bow. And that was his third deer of the year with the trad bow. He took one in Maryland, took one in Ohio, obviously, and then one in PA. And, but like that evening walking out again, the one field that we go through, basically, it was like the second year in a row where I had an encounter walking out of this field with just like a giant buck. And there were like three doe also like bedded in this field, basically. And I was like, okay, so we know they're still hanging around. The next morning, we basically got up in the same trees. And like I said, we had deer action all day. And then he left because to meet up with his good friend, Kyle. And I stayed in that area and I had deer all day. And I just passed a couple of younger bucks and all that stuff. But walking out on that field, it was like dark, dark. And I didn't even use my headlamp. I'm just like following like where I normally go. And there was a patch of woods to my right. And I always loved it. And basically when it would dip down and bottoms out, it connects to where I was basically going on that little mini upslope. And I just, the terrain on the map looks like what I hunt here, what I've always grown up hunting. When you get into it, it's a little bit like it, but it's not, it's still Ohio. It's more hilly and briar than it is, you know, timber. And so walking out there that night, I saw a couple deer, like just the silhouettes, and they bombed down in over there. And like one sounded heavy footed. And when I got back to meet up with my buddy, he's like, where are you going to go tomorrow? I said, I'm going to go right in there where I've sent you waypoints where I like, I want to finally hunt that finally this year. And he's like, okay, sounds good. And like, that's what I did in the morning. And like I said, I walking down, I wanted to get a little bit further, but there was just, it was like a briar patch that I was afraid I was even going to clip my string and break my string on my bow. It was that bad. So I was like, let me just back up a little bit, a couple yards, get off that logging road, a couple yards the best I can. And those deer literally in the morning just came walking right down that logging road, the doe did, and the buck kind of worked opposite, came through the timber. But it was like using my instincts on that one a little bit, but I went away from the Old Faithful of like where we were basically. And like, you know, you always hear, you got to put time in. And I was like, I'm going to save that for maybe like a Saturday hunt, just in case, because it is Old Faithful basically. But I was like, I'm going to try this. I'm going to bomb in here, just see what I see. And it worked out for me.
Yeah. Here's what I will say. I'm already thinking about once the season's over, I got permission from a landowner to do a little bit of, I guess you'll say, I'm not going to call it like any type of real deer management because I am not going to do it the right way. Long story short, I got the okay to basically cut down some Osage orange trees and some black locust trees to allow sunlight to get to the ground and make it thicker in certain areas. And that's the whole point there. And I'm going to match those up with terrain features on some of this. And I don't know, man, I'm thinking about one, I have to move a tree stand probably 60 yards to get it micro adjusted into this pinch point. And then I have to add/move two more tree stands into a new location as well. And I feel like once I do that, and then being able to micro adjust with, you know, the saddle and all that stuff, I'm going to have this farm just the locations pegged. And that next year I'm going to, I don't want to call my shot, but based off of this work that I'm planning on doing now, who knows if I get it done or not because of life, yeah. You know, but if I can do a couple of these pocket, like tree cutting deals matched with a really good tree stand location and terrain features, dude, I'm going to have it set up and it's going to be kill city. You know what I mean?
Yep. I love to hear that.
Yeah. Yeah. Outside of all of that, how many, like, did this season's goals and expectations match the outcome so far?
I would say like a good bit. Yeah. I mean, I like I said, my main goal is definitely for sure to leave Ohio with that tag filled on a good deer too, and that happened, and had that really cool encounter with like a big mature deer there as well. Having that close call in PA in that early October timeframe too kind of solidified, like, I don't want to make it sound like I know what I'm doing, but it just kind of put that other like little notch there, like. He beat me by not letting me shoot him, but I also beat him, but also just because I got in that spot and I saw him basically and almost was able to do that. Like, it's just that learning factor of that basically, of where I feel like it was also a win because of that learning aspect. Really the only time that I felt like deflated was that weekend that I went up to New York and then was able to hunt that Sunday here in archery for PA, because kind of like what you said earlier, like that was finally like the day, like that was the day where I felt like it was cold enough. It just had that good feeling. And leading up to that, like even like that Friday, Saturday, a couple of my cameras where I was going to hunt were like having some deer on them. I was like, I just think it's that week. It's usually that day where we would be wrapping up our old season basically in PA because of, they extended it this year basically. And I'm like, I always had deer on camera during this time frame, like move in. I would always want to hunt it. It just felt right. And not seeing anything those 2 days was like, dang, what happened? Like, what went on? And then the last couple of years as an adult taking the gun out, I just never felt confident with it. Like, I felt confident shooting it, but just seeing bucks, like I'm not I want to go walk around. Like that's what I end up doing because I get antsy with the gun in my hand compared to a bow, but I don't know. I just never felt like, oh, it's going to happen, or very confident of filling a tag basically. And the way that it did, I was thrilled. Like, it was awesome shooting one with right next to my best friend and stuff like that. But at the same time, it's like, it was also kind of luck, you know, like kind of typical rifle hunting, but just the experience in the moment was awesome.
Yeah. Is it too early to start talking about next year?
I don't think so. I really don't. I mean, my dad and I, Dan, were just doing that the last 2 days. Like, we were like, because he ended up filling his buck tag the same day that on Sunday for PA rifle as well. And we were like, all right, like, he was all pumped because I didn't kill a buck there at where he and I hunt. He's like, that just means one more hopefully will survive and all that stuff. So we were just like, okay, we got to come up with a game plan when I could come in and we could go scout, because The one spot that I had that buck encounter in early October or mid October was a spot where I hunted a lot as a kid with the rifle. But the last decade, we kind of let it go during bow season just because of our other locations that we kind of hunt. And I was like, Dad, let's go put a reveal down there. And we did. And Dan, like, the intel we got from this past season there was phenomenal, because we would walk it now during rifle season and it would still be tore up. I'm like, we got to get a camera in here. We just got to see. We got to hunt it. We got to spend time. And this year we both did. We both spent time in there hunting it just to gain experience. We also put some cameras in to see what's movement is like. And so now we're like coming up with that game plan already for next year of when can we scout it? How will we approach it a little bit differently? Because it was during the rut, it was just on fire. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know, man. I'm always thinking. I would like to get at least one more deer in my freezer, I think, for this mm-hmm. year. I also would like to shoot a giant buck yet this year in Iowa. we'll see what happens if that's an option. I'm going to knock on a couple doors over the course of the next couple days just for a late season option close to my house. And when I mean close, I mean right down the road. There are a couple farms that I know they have shotgun hunters that go through them, but post shotgun season, if I go, hey man, I got a doe tag, I got a muzzleloader, I got a muzzleloader tag, I got a daughter who has to fill her youth tag, like,
yeah,
can I just hop in there and shoot a doe or something like that? And I think they would be okay with that. But outside of that, it's never too early, in my opinion, to start thinking about next season. Even if this season is over, that just tells me you're passionate about it. Outside of that, anything else we got to cover today?
No, man. I think that was a good one. That was fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. A couple girl dads here just chatting it up. Yep. So, hey, man, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to hop on and BS with me a little bit. And be sure everybody, dude, like, I'm not just promoting it when I say this, but Jeremy does a really good job with the Antler Up podcast. Make sure you give that a fair shot. He does really good things over there on that podcast. Has some really good guests, covers some really good topics. Go check that out. Jeremy, man, thank you very much for doing this today. I'm not sure when I'm going to chat with you next, but if I don't, have a Merry Christmas, man.
You too, Dan. Thanks for everything.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.